Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Today we're talking all things food, picky eating, and how to have great relationships with food and for yourself and for your kids. We're talking to Jennifer Anderson all about her new book called Feed Them Well and about her viral Instagram account that talks about all of these things. So let's go. Not only am I really excited about your book coming out called Feed Them Well, which comes out next month, I'm also really excited to just talk about this topic because I am a picky eater and now have three children that are dabbling in picky eating, and I would love to change that. And so, and I saw your book and your account, I was like, this is a conversation that I need not only for my children, but also for me. So here we are. Looking at
it. Here we are.
Okay. As I mentioned before we started recording, I need to find your snack guide. Snacking is something that, unfortunately, and I love my mother, but my mother is like the queen of snacks and snacking. And I find myself doing it a lot of the time as well. I'd love to change the habit. I find it to be also overwhelming because you want your kids to eat and there are certain things they like and they don't like. So help me.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about what's your big problem for today?
I mean, I think, so there's all this conversation about eating the rainbow, which I know based on your book cover is definitely a big part of what you're talking about with making sure kids get all the colors of the rainbow. And I try not to have food that's really unhealthy in our house. I'm pretty mindful of the food I bring in the house and that I give to my kids. And there's, with snacks, for example, there's a convenience factor of like things that are made in pre-made bags that you just take out the door. And summer I find easier because of the fruits and vegetables available, but I still find it hard. I mean, crackers are just so easy.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I will never fault neither myself nor you nor any other parent for giving their kids crackers. In fact, I like crackers.
But I walk around with, I've tried to be more mindful. Actually, I gave up crackers for Lent. That's how bad
okay.
cracker problem is.
Yeah.
But I've tried to be more mindful of it, but it's just so easy.
Yeah. So rather than saying, I'm not going to do crackers anymore, because I don't want to live a life in which there are no crackers, and it sounds like you don't either, right? What can we add to the cracker? So crackers can be amazing little vehicles for other delivery, right? So we could put an avocado on a cracker. We could put, and of course, we could get picky kids, right? One thing that helps picky kids is choice. So we give them some diced avocado, we give them some nut butter, we give them, I don't know, blueberry. The younger the kid, the weirder the thing combos they'll go for. So you put them out there and you say, what do you want to put on your little cracker truck? And you call the cracker a truck or a forklift or whatever your kid is into, rocket ship. And then you ask them what they want to put on there. It's not quite as easy, right? Blueberries make a mess. Avocado makes a mess. But it starts to give them the idea that, oh, I can eat crackers, but I also get to eat something else. And you're pairing a food that they really prefer with a food that maybe they're okay with, or maybe they're learning to like, but the combo of something familiar with that other thing makes them more likely to eat both things.
What if they just don't eat the other thing and just eat the crackers?
Yeah, I mean, that happens too. And so you can kind of experiment with what they might eat. You can also make it harder for them to avoid the other things. You can mash up the avocado on the cracker. You can pre-put, like my kids, I mean, they will still just eat the crackers, right? But if I put the peanut butter on the cracker, if I mash the avocado on the cracker and add a little bit of salt or whatever, it sprinkles, sprinkles are something that can get kids to eat a lot of things. A little bit of, I don't know, your dye-free stars or whatever you're into. And they will eat almost anything with sprinkles on it. Still, my kids are now getting older and they will still eat anything that's got sprinkles on it. That can be the step, right? They're like, oh, I'd rather eat a plain cracker. Mom put the peanut butter on there. I don't know if I want to eat it. And then you add a little bit of sprinkles. They're like, never mind, I'll eat it.
Right. With a cracker, for example, and then we'll move off the crackers. Some things that we want to put on a cracker to add something to the cracker, is that to prevent an insulin spike, or what's the thought behind
it? Sure. So if one, we want kids to eat more variety. We also want them to eat protein. So if we're giving them a cracker, chances are we're not getting a lot of fiber, we're not getting a lot of protein, we're not getting a lot of fat necessarily. So we want to think of, how do I add that? Also, kids are often, they're not eating enough fruits and veggies. And so we also want them to eat more of those. So we're really thinking, how can I get some of those other foods that are trickier to eat into my kid? So that's where we're thinking, that's going to keep them full longer. Like the whole, I'm hungry every 10 minutes, I want a snack, I want a snack, I want a snack. I mean, that is so annoying for all of us. So if we can add protein and fat to their snack, often they're not going to be hungry in 10 minutes. They're going to make it to the next meal or make it to the next snack. So the more ways that we can, I mean, dip, you take your ranch mix and put it into full fat Greek yogurt, you get tons of protein in there. You also get the fat. It also tastes good. You can dip your cracker in there. There's a lot of ways that we can add to get them full so that they make it to the next eating opportunity.
And a typical day for kids, or even just ourselves, what do meal times look like in an ideal world? I know it's different for kids of different ages, but let's say you have young children. What are the times? Because this is something I'm trying myself to map out and plan out. But what's like in a dream world scenario?
Well, dream world, I mean, we got kids, so like, what does that even mean? I don't know. But we want to feed them pretty close to when they wake up, right? I have one kid who's got kind of a lower appetite in the morning. I've got one that needs to eat within 10 minutes of waking up, or he's a monster. So like, know your kid, feed them as soon as they get up, give them a breakfast that's got some protein in it and some fat in it, right? That's going to get them to morning snack, especially if they're a toddler. We want to hit morning snack sometime in between breakfast and lunch. When we're thinking toddler, we're thinking every 2 to 3 hours, they're probably going to eat-ish. And then we got a snack before, maybe after afternoon snack, or sorry, afternoon nap, right? Then there's dinner. Depending on your kid, they may or may not need a bedtime snack. So I have a kid who was having a hard time staying on the growth chart. So bedtime snack is a non-negotiable for us. We need that last opportunity to cram in more calories. But if you've got a kid who's fine and they have a big appetite and they could eat enough at dinner, then they're fine. You don't have to do a bedtime snack. But really in that toddler phase, we're looking for roughly every 2 to 3 hours. It doesn't have to be that often. We're looking for 3 meals, 2 snacks usually. As I get older into elementary, then we're looking at more like 3 meals, 1 snack, something like that.
Okay. So that's pretty much what I'm doing. I'm doing the breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then I do a snack at like 10, and then a snack 2:30 or 3-ish. The breakfast, I mean, let's just start with the first meal of the day. I am someone who, I don't wake up hungry at all. My sister wakes up ravenous. So for me, breakfast isn't a big, like, I'm good with coffee. I also notice my kids being like, why aren't you having breakfast with us? Or why are you just having a coffee? So I'm mindful of that. And my oldest daughter only likes cereal in the morning. My second daughter, great with eggs, great with yogurt, anything. For someone who is, because I talk to a lot of my mom friends, cereal is the only thing, or bread or a bagel, you know, those types of foods in the morning. What are some other options that you would suggest to people that might help with a child who's like mine, who's only wanting to eat the cereal, even though they're healthy options for cereal?
Sure. So one is, you can pair something with the cereal. Of course, they may or may not eat that. You can also get a higher protein version of the bagel, of the bread. I like to make higher protein French toast sticks, which is basically just, I mean, call them something fancy, but it's basically where you just take French toast and you soak it in the egg a lot, kind of like squeeze it in there so that it's soaking up the egg. Basically, you're looking to get a whole egg in per piece of French toast. You make the French toast, you cut it into strips and call it French toast sticks. When you do something like that, they're still getting that protein, but they kind of also get that bready experience. They can dip it in maple syrup or whatever they want. And then you know they're getting a little protein in there. Also, choosing cereals that have a higher protein option is another thing. And then sometimes, and this is not something I recommend to everyone, but just to give parents options. As the parent, you can kind of determine what's in the house, right? So you could strategically just not buy cereal for a while and give kids those other options. And often when kids realize, oh, we just don't have that, so we have to have something else for breakfast today, they'll push themselves out a little bit. But if they always know cereal's in the cabinet, then they're just going to keep asking until they get what they want, right? Pester power is what it's called. It works. So sometimes you just really have to say, hey, we don't have that in the house. We do have toast and peanut butter. We do have French toast sticks. We do have these other options. And the nice thing about something like a French toast stick or a protein pancake or something like that is you can make a couple of extras, stick them in the freezer and kind of have them ready to go. Especially if your child is a little older, we make these really high calorie pancakes for one of my sons and they're just in the freezer for him. He can pull them out, stick them in the microwave or something like that.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Because I like the ease of knowing what to buy. For high protein cereal, it's three wishes, right? Is that like a big one? What are
Yeah, that's a big one. It really, I think there's like, I'm always bad with brands because there's always a new one coming out. But Three Wishes is one we do. I'm trying to think of what my husband just bought. He's like, look, this is high protein. It's like Flax Plus or something like that.
Or is there a pancake mix that's like a high protein pancake mix that you love? I know Birch, what is it?
Birch Benders?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Yeah. We've done that high protein one. We've also just done like a Kodiak pancake mix, like Costco, something like that. You basically just kind of look. Does it have 3, 4, 5 plus grams of protein in it? That's great. Kids often don't need as much protein as we think. Like if we've got a toddler, they're usually good on 13 to 16 grams of protein a day. That's the equivalent of 2 8-ounce glasses of milk or a couple of eggs and a piece of toast. So we don't have to freak out about protein for little kids. Just be mindful, is there a protein food? And when we think about protein foods, we're thinking those nuts, those seeds, any sort of meats and beans, eggs, those sorts of things. We want to make sure we're adding those in to snacks, meals, and just having that one thing can often be the difference between your kid coming back to you in 10 minutes and saying, I'm hungry, and coming back to like being ready for the next meal or snack.
What are your favorite on-the-go snacks just to have something that every parent should have in their arsenal, whether it's in their pantry or their refrigerator?
I mean, I like to have a good bar. Lara bars, my son for the first 7 years of his life was like 20% Lara bar. The peanut butter chocolate chip Lara bar was something he would always reliably eat. They've got protein, they've got fat. They're kind of like higher in calories, which is often something that you got to think about for those toddlers. and they're generally not a choking hazard. Obviously, if you've got a toddler baby, you want to be really careful with that. Always have them sitting up. But those are the bars that we just have gone back to over and over in terms of something that we can just grab and go, truly. My favorite when they were toddlers was a little cup, you know, the ones with the thing on the top. So if they can't spill it, theoretically. My kids always can spill everything, but theoretically, they can't spill it. I would just cut up something, like add in some cooked frozen peas, some apples, and some little diced up cheese. Every time we went to the grocery store, I'd always bring a little cup of that. So as we were going around, they could be eating and they would just eat those things. So toddlers, the more we can train them to eat those weird mixes, the better. That's not going to carry into older elementary or anything like that. I mean, kids wouldn't touch a snack like that now, but we can put those little things together and just stick them in a little container.
So you had apples and cheese. Is there like string cheese feels like the easiest thing to...
Sure. It could be string cheese, but if we cut that up, that's a choking hazard. So you can either just take a block of cheese and just dice up little cubes, or you can take a string cheese stick and cut it like you would a hot dog. So into either half or quarters, and then just make little things. And of course, they just take one thing at a time out of there. And it could also be halved blueberries. It could be strawberry. It could be literally any food that's not going to be too messy wherever you're going. And also frozen veggies are your friend. Like you could just quickly cook some peas out of the freezer, give them a minute. We would stick those in the cup all the time.
They would just like shovel peas in their mouth?
Yeah. Well, when they're toddlers, right? If they kind of have experience with that, one pea at a time, with their little pinch of grasp, babies too. So we just always had those little cups. That was our go-to if we had any chance to get them to have some food prep time before we go shopping or whatever we were doing. Obviously, that's not always going to work, but really the thing about frozen veggies is after you cook them, they're kind of softer. Like they're a different consistency than if you cook them on your own. And my kids just kind of got used to that. So we could even do like a 4-veggie mix and I bring them that to eat on the way home from daycare or stuff like that.
And when your kid is like, I just want a plain tortilla.
Yeah. I mean, by the time, once we're talking three, they're starting to be in preschool, they're not loving their veggie cups anymore, right? When kids just want a tortilla, we kind of want to look at the big picture. They're probably fine. They're probably just kind of going through a phase, but not all picky eating is typical. So if everything is, I just want a tortilla, and the food list is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, you want to get a better idea of how serious is their picky eating. I have a pediatric screener for ARFID and extreme picky eating on my website to help parents kind of understand what's going on with this picky eating. Is this something that I need to be thinking about? The other thing is we want to keep exposing. Like maybe your child just wants the tortilla. Are we still exposing them to the other foods, right? Maybe they just eat a tortilla on taco night, but then the rest of the day, you're going to want to be serving those protein foods, those other foods throughout the day, so that when they do get that tortilla, you're not surprised, you're not angry, your blood pressure isn't rising because you're like, oh my gosh, they haven't eaten any veggies or protein all day, and now I relied on this taco meal, and now all they're eating is a tortilla. Because mealtimes are a chance to connect with our kids. It's more than just nutrition. So the more that we can connect with them during these meals, instead of just being worried about their nutrition, often the better they eat, because when we're not pressuring them and we're not worried about it, they're just kind of like, oh, I can explore what's there. Oh, I have a piece of cheese on my plate. I have a piece of bean. Whatever's going in your tacos, you can have that on your plate. Doesn't have to be a lot. But then you're not surprised going in. You're like, ah, this is the night my kid's just going to eat or tortilla. I'm going to keep exposing them and I'm going to feed them XYZ the rest of the day.
And what are your thoughts on pouches?
Here's the thing about pouches. They can be convenient, but the kids are not getting an exposure to the food. They're not getting very strong exposure. right? So they're not smelling it. They're getting one texture in their mouth. They're not having to chew it. They're like not getting their face messy or their hands messy. Unless they're like my kids who just squeezed out the pouches. Oh my gosh, so annoying. But they're not getting the full experience of eating. So if you do have a picky eater, if you're relying on pouches, what's happening is your kid needs a lot of flexibility to be able to eat. Like if you and I are eating blueberries, we're playing the blueberry lottery, right? We're going to get blueberries that are amazing. And then we're going to get blueberries that are so sour. Like we were not expecting that. We can handle that because we've been around for a while. Kids are really surprised. They're like, oh my gosh, what did I just eat? Is this even the same food? So they need that flexibility. They need practice with it. When we feed them a food that is always exactly the same, they don't have to use the flexibility that they have, and they don't have to build the flexibility that they need. So pouches, okay, they happen. We're going to use pouches. We know we're going to use pouches. Is there a way that we can add in a little cup that they have to actually chew? Is there, not chew the cup, but chew the food in the cup. Is there something, of course they might chew the cup too, we know that. But is there something we can add in, even something like a Larabar, right? They can hold it, they can chew it, it can make a mess. Every time they're making a mess with their hands or their face, they're getting used to the sensation of food. And that actually helps a lot with picky eating.
Good point. So with young children, I mean, your kids are older than mine. Mine are 5.5, 4, and 1.5. It's like you go to all of these, whether it's school or birthdays being celebrated, it's like a sugar fest.
Oh, yeah.
Constantly. And even the dessert factor it's always being discussed, always being talked about with friends. And we do a lot of homemade popsicles, especially in the summer, which is great.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
What's your thought on the subject of dessert? And also, how do you talk about it or present it in your household or teach people how to do that so it's not something that is like a secretive thing or something that's just a special thing that gets people jazzed on wanting to have it? Like, normalizing it or talking about it in a way that allows for a healthy relationship with sugary foods.
Sure. I think the number one thing we can do to help kids have a good relationship with any food, including sweets, is just call it by its name. Hey, dessert is a category, but also this is a cookie, this is candy. We're not adding on. It's when we start adding on words, like this is candy and we only have it sometimes. This is candy, aren't you so lucky? This is candy, it will make you fat, right? Kids are, even if they hear adults saying, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I'm so bad if I eat the candy. We start adding on these words about bodies, these words about guilt or excitement. We add these emotions words. And this is where we start to complicate their relationship with food. Instead, we just want to call it by its name. It's not good. It's not bad. We know as adults, kids might be eating too much sugar, and that might be bad, but that's a conversation for us to kind of keep to ourselves. It's unrealistic for us to expect kids to make food decision based on information when they're in elementary school or when they're preschoolers or when they're toddlers, right? We would never expect that of a toddler. We were just going to say, okay, you can have, here's one cookie. And then we're going to distract them and move them away if we don't want them to eat another cookie. Having that same mentality in preschool and even elementary school is good because we don't have to put all the burden. There's so much burden. There's so much drama over food dye, over sugar, over all these things that it creates fear and guilt and shame. And as parents, we are get the brunt of it. We don't have to give that to our kids yet. Eventually they're going to get it, but we actually don't have to give that to them. The other thing is we can just not add hype. We can just be like, hey, this is dessert. Another thing, a little trick that I think often works with preschoolers is to just put the little dessert on their plate during dinner or whenever you're going to do dessert, if that's something that you even do in your family. It's just put it on their plate. They don't have to eat dinner to get it because we get into this sort of like, oh, if you eat broccoli, you can have the cookie. Well, what they're hearing is broccoli is not good and cookies are really good. What we want is the opposite. We want them to know nobody's confused about whether cookies are good, but we also want them to think broccoli is good. So we don't want to add this layer of shame or guilt or drama to the cookie. We could just give them the cookie and not worry about it. And that kind of helps normalize it. Of course, like you mentioned, birthday parties, kids start hyping it up. So as they get into elementary school, it's going to come with hype. There's no way to prevent the hype if your kids have exposure to other children.
I want to talk about your book, of course, and as part of that, what you're doing on your social media about getting kids involved in what they're choosing to eat. I love that idea, and I find that I'm very limited with my skills in the kitchen. However, when I do involve my kids in baking, which I do a lot of baking with my kids, they get really excited about it. They're really into it. So when they do make something, make food or make a snack with me, they get more excited and interested in eating it. Can you talk about the game that you kind of make this with kids and whether it's snack time or just mealtime overall, the checklist or making it an interactive thing for kids and the logic behind it?
Sure. So there's a couple ways you can do it. You can, if you've got an older kid, you could have words, right? But I find even with older kids, they like pictures. So you can say, pick one from each category. And then you have the little, here's some veggies, here's some fruits, here's some protein foods, here's your cracker choices, whatever. You can kind of have them pick and choose what they want. That is something that worked for my son when he was about 4. I'm trying to think. He wasn't reading a lot when he was 4. So did we use pictures? I don't really remember.
And you did this with your snack chart, right?
So the snack chart is a little bit different. The snack chart has 20 options of just snacks, bedtime snacks that we can have. And we were having drama. Oh my gosh. Every single night was like, oh, now it's snack time. What are we going to have? Nobody's got any executive function left at 8 o'clock on a weeknight before school. And you're at, I'm sorry, I don't have any ideas. So I was like, here's all the snacks that we can have. Here's all the bedtime snacks we can have. Apples and peanut butter, popcorn, which is a joking answer for little kids, but mine are bigger. Ice cream, that was on there. All the things, some cereal, toast, whatever we had, hard-boiled eggs. And then they would look at that on the weekend and say, what are the snacks that I want to have for the upcoming week? And this is hard, a little harder for younger kids, but you could also have them pick this in the morning or whatever works for you. And then they picked their snack. And then I knew exactly what they were having. So I could zip, zip, make it. I mean, none of these snacks are things that I have to prepare. They're either ready to go or something. And so they would be able to choose that. Lot less complaining, no drama. The drama was just poof, gone. And you can do this sort of thing for any snack, anytime. Give them a little bit of agency over what they want to eat. And you're still controlling the options. And the one rule was you get to pick one snack. Like from this chart, you can't repeat the snacks. So we're not going to have ice cream every single night.
And where does one find this chart?
So the chart currently is a pre-order bonus for my book. That's why it's a little bit trickier to find. But yeah. It was my special snack chart. And I was like, I share so much stuff on social media. I made this just for my kids.
By the way, the genius idea.
Yeah, I could share this now.
I feel like it's such a smart idea. And also just the options and like the decision fatigue that parents get into, even if it's afternoon snack time, it's like, where do you even begin with all of the different, oh, I want this, I want that. Having a visual, I think, is so helpful and so smart. And then having someone like yourself already prepare it makes it even more exciting and easy to be able to make those decisions with your kids and also allow them to have some ability to choose what they're going to have.
It's amazing what a little bit of agency does.
For sure.
And kids are like, oh my gosh, yes, I chose that. And yeah, you put the thing together, but it's like this, the parents' job to kind of like set the environment, give them the options. And then when they choose, you don't have any internal angst because you already set it up.
I feel like based on this conversation, I'm going to go inside and just throw away all of my cereal.
Oh, you don't have to do that.
I mean, it's true though. I mean, it might sound like it's obvious, but if you just don't have that as an option in the morning, then there's going to be, I mean, it's going to be met with a tornado that will occur with my picky eater.
As long as there's some sort of option that you know they are going to be able to eat this, because there's two like ways you can handle it. The one is like, I have an extreme picky eater and I'm going to take away their safe food. That's where you run into really big problems, because then the kid is freaking out and kind of starving. I don't believe in starving a kid out. I just can't really get behind that idea, right? But they do have these other foods that they're comfortable with, but they would never choose if there was this other option of the food that they absolutely adore. So if they do have a couple of options that you know, yeah, they'll go for this. They're going to be okay. That's not going to cause anxiety for them. It's going to be all right. When those are the only options, then all of a sudden they're like, okay, well, these are literally my only options.
Okay, so for your book specifically, Feed Them Well, I mean, you obviously have a huge social media presence and put out so much information on your website and also on social media. What kind of sent you into writing a book that you felt like would provide other information and help for parents feeding their kids?
Getting information from social media can be so stressful.
It's like, also really hard. I just tried it and it's really hard.
It is really hard. There's like all these snippets and you're trying to figure out like, what do I do? Do I do this? Do I that? Do that? And this other person said, if I restrict candy, I'm going to give my kid an eating disorder. And then this person said they're eating too much sugar. And if they eat too much sugar, they're going to get cancer, like whatever it is. Right. And so social media is not the place to give parents a framework for feeding their kids, starting with their babies all the way through, right? We can't get that from social media. We can't get that from articles with big, scary headlines. And there's so much more nuance. Parents have so many more options that I was like, I want to create something that a parent can read and one, feel good about themselves and not scared. And I feel like that's a big thing just by itself. And then the other one is the ability to solve their own problems, right? So like, what happens when you have an extreme picky eater and they're eating too much sugar, but you're also concerned about their growth? What do you do? That's a dilemma that a lot of us face. That's a specific one that I faced with one of my kids. And I had to kind of reason through that, like, okay, what are the priorities? What am I going to do? And in the end, I was like, oh, he just needs to eat a little more sugar. And I was able to feel confident in that decision because I had a framework for how to make the decision. And that's what this book is, because you start feeding your baby and maybe you're like, oh, I'm going to do baby-led weaning and I'm going to do purees. And it's this big debate and you're all worried about it. And you're like, okay, I'm going to do it. And you go all in on baby-led weaning or whatever it is. And then it works for one kid, or maybe you get in and you're like, what is happening? This is not working. My kid is, this does not seem right. And then you have to go through all this angst. Oh my gosh, am I a bad parent? Did I do it wrong? You're all worried. And in reality, that was one option for feeding your baby. And puree feeding can also be a great option for feeding your baby. And if we can just know that we're okay if we have to make changes, it's okay. It just means we're being a responsive parent. It didn't mean we failed at something. It just meant that wasn't the right thing for our kid. So that's the main thing that I want to give parents through this book, is you can start feeding your baby. You can make changes. You can change course. You can make it through these feeding dilemmas that will inevitably come up, right? You're debating what do you want to do with a cereal? That's a little dilemma. Maybe you'll have a bigger one at another time. Who knows? Hopefully not. But these things can get complicated. And I think the more that we can help kids we help our kids know it's not just about nutrition. It's also about their relationship with their body. It's also about their relationship with you. All of these sorts of things can come together. And the only way that I could communicate that was in a book form where I gave people enough space where we could actually go deep.
Is there different language and different talking points you have for people who are girl moms versus boy moms when it comes to how to talk about food and your relationship with food?
I think boys and girls need to hear the same thing almost always. There are a couple issues. Like, we look in society, eating disorders are more associated with kind of thinness for girls, whereas with boys, it's body fat thinness, but also muscular growth. So there's like some differences, but I think for the most part, kids need to hear the same thing about food. Like, our boys and girls both need to hear every food does something different in our body. What I eat doesn't make me good or bad, right? What I eat is just what I eat. Our kids all need to have that good relationship with their body. And I don't know that I really talked about this in the book, but I would say the one difference that I've kind of seen consistently, and of course, it definitely isn't true for every boy and girl, but danger. Oh my gosh. If I add a little bit of danger to my kid's dinner, whether it's a toothpick or give them a knife to use or something like that, suddenly they're interested in cooking, they're interested in eating, they're interested in whatever the thing is. So if you have a danger kid, whether they're a girl or a boy, lean into it as long safely, of course. But that is something that as a boy mom, I have just observed.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a big part. I mean, my son is 1.5 and I'm already seeing, I'm like, this is going to be...
It's like they see it and they go for it. I'm like, why would you climb toward the oven? Why would you even know? How do you know?
He just opens up the oven. My husband was like, I'm telling you right now, if I turned my back for 3 seconds, he'd be in the oven.
He'd be in the oven.
Himself.
Yes. Oh my gosh, so true.
Okay, so finally, before we finish, you mentioned the panic headlines and the stress factor that I think all parents are kind of being faced with every single day, whether you go on social media or not, but just all of the alarmist mentality of these headlines, like the terrible things that are in our food. And then you look into it more and this is bad, this is terrible, blah, blah. What do you say to parents who just feel kind of paralyzed in the overwhelm of all of the terrible things in all of the food that we're giving our children?
Yeah, we got to chill out. We got to take it down a notch. It's not good for us to be stressed out all the time. And we don't want to be passing that on to our kids. I have a set of 5 questions in the book that I talk about. When you see a headline, is it sensational? Because if it's sensational, no. That person is not a reliable source of content. The people who are not sensational, who are boring, those are the people who are going to add some nuance. It's just not as exciting for me to say, well, some kids are affected by food diet, but not the majority. And if so, it's probably minor, but it's based on how much they need. I mean, that's a real nuanced answer, and it's so boring, right? So that's not going to get a bunch of likes on the internet. What is like, red food diets are giving your child cancer. Well, obviously, we're all going to pay attention to that. So if it's sensational, you can keep going. You can also ask yourself, does my kid eat a lot of this food? If your kid isn't eating a lot of food diet, you truly don't need to be worried about it unless there's something in your child's behavior that is making you think, hey, maybe they're affected by food diet. So, but otherwise, if your kid is having food diet, like some parties or that one food you buy or the couple foods you buy, don't lose sleep over this one. Does a person know what they're talking about? Because you might hear an attorney talking about heart disease. You're like, what? Why is this attorney talking about heart disease? That doesn't make sense. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So it's a great reason to move on and say, oh, that's just not a great thing. The other question that I think is really important is if you're all of a sudden scared of chocolate, heavy metals found in chocolate. Okay, how much chocolate does your child eat? Let's say they eat a lot. My kids actually do eat a lot. Can you swap that out for foods your child will actually eat? Because if you heard something scary about carrots or sweet potatoes, because they've also been in the news, right? But your kid will eat nothing else with vitamin A, like beef liver or some meat products or other orange veggies, then maybe you shouldn't worry about it because it's much more important for your kid to have the vitamin A, right? So we have to think about this globally. Like, how is this actually going to impact my child? And do I also have time, money, energy to actually make the switch? Because if not, this is true. This is not your thing to worry about. You have so many options when it comes to worrying, and you can worry about a million things. Don't worry about the things you can't change. Don't worry about the things that are not worth your time. And I think so many of the headlines really fall into that. And then the other question is, in terms of how these things impact your child. So in the book, I have these things called food impact tiers, which is where you can say, okay, what's the most important thing? We got to make sure your kid is getting enough calories. We have to make sure they're getting enough protein. This is so far away from caring about food dye. If they're not doing okay in the things that are going to have the broadest impact on their health, then worrying about the little stuff is not going to have a big impact on their health either. And we just have to really think in context. What is the context in which my kids are eating?
Finally, before we leave, what are absolute no items that you just do not allow in your house?
Oh, great question. The one item is soda. That's my one item where I can't go there. I don't like the marketing of soda. I don't like how food companies have treated communities around the world. I don't like their marketing strategies. And soda itself is really hard on our body. I don't believe in good foods and bad foods. I think we've got food and they all do something different in our body. And I'm not going to go out there and all of a sudden say soda is bad. And I don't around my kids either, but I won't buy it for my house. And they have it when they go to parties. They have it on an airplane. They have it other places. They have some of their own money. They can go spend their money on soda. But once they see the price tag, they don't want to buy it either. So that's my food.
What about the good for you sodas?
I don't know. I laugh. I mean, if you want to get your fiber from soda, that's fine. We do a little bit of sparkling water. Occasionally we'll do like some Spindrift or something like that, sparkling juice. The thing about the kind of healthier for you versions is often it's just a marketing opportunity for companies to make us try to feel better. If you're going to drink soda, enjoy your soda. And if you like the better for you sodas, great. But also there's still soda. They're still doing something in your body, whatever that is. Again, I don't really have a problem with it. It's just there's so much marketing opportunity that these companies are just making millions of billions off of swapping one hyperpalatable food for another one. It's like they've got their sugar, fat, and salt. They've got, you know, they're still training our palate to love sweet, all that stuff. It's just swapping one for another. Maybe one's organic and dye-free. Maybe one's not.
Yeah, it's all so much information. Well, I'm really excited to get your book. I'm really excited to get the chart after I pre-order and involve my kids in all of this. So thank you so much. And I'm excited for you and congratulations on getting a full book like that done, because it is definitely a lot of work.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
It is hard.
It's a lot, but it's about a great subject. And I think one that will really help parents in the space of food for kids of all ages, which is amazing. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.